the needle on the record, put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record, when the song beyond go like.
The only way that a human being can get a bird flu or a swine flu is if it is injected in them.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
The needle is defective, and the needle breaks the record when the needle is protected. Prevention is the fever, bringing death to the receiver. There's no effort in believing that the method sees the fever. See the leader, diseases are invented in the lab. One believes it, but reading recent mentions of the jab. Centered in the grand scab of corruption and lies and deep views and dooms and news rumors to the public eye. But now the floor has risen on the cause of autism. Doctors show research the scores of autism. It's nerves, Korean vaccine. Often there's more given, peace ignored and forbidden. Profit is war driven. A score billion on vaccines alone, and the government don't care. They're always taxing the clones, and the CDC is right behind this rolling car. Part and vault from the start, and this evolving art. Big pharma, big deception. Obama, big karma. Enterprise, Roche, Bayer, and Baxter Healthcare. All the sorted history on stacks of healthcare. You got HIV and birth humans up in the shop. Something connecting the dots between the money that's lost. Yeah, I think it's a couple of blocks.
If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine. If the doctor says they can take it himself, just say no. Say no to the vaccine. There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine. If Obama says they can take it himself, just say no.
I don't need your prescription, I ain't got no prescription. Corporate pharmaceutical dealing with politicians. Put them on prescription, that should be our own decision. Whether we were spending on vaccines or health and education. Soon they enlist the general populace. They added to the list, pharmaceutical benefits. Yo, we're left with thin line, Glasgow Smith Klein. Often I can find feelings in your disease. Mac, I cough and head of swine. Your population linked with holding vaccines. Rather than a product license, save some human beings. Now that's it, they're counting every year. So they want to hear us when we're running on the machine. Yeah, another flu pill, that ain't no bigger threat. What about an aging population with no safety net? So we continue to believe everything we read. They're just a human case and they're used to it.
Weapons of trial and error, we're smiling in terror at the doctor and nurse. Take a hold of yourself and control of your health and say no.
Thank you. Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of quote-unquote child protection. The ability to see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units to believe a lie, it becomes their truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of the Hippocratic oath taken to first do no harm. I left my career as a surgeon in the early 1990s after witnessing research fraud, experimentation on poor people, and euthanasia. After the brain damage of my only child born in 1996 from vaccines he received due to my belief in what I had been taught in medical school, I started researching what vaccines really do, which is create all autoimmune diseases, non-traumatic seizures, cancer, and genetic damage in people and in pets. I also started studying natural therapies to reverse the diseases caused by Big Pharma, as well as all the toxins we are exposed to. In 1997, I developed the Hippocrates Protocol to reverse all diseases. And in 1999, I created the diagrams on my websites, including the big picture of all diseases, which is the first diagram found on both reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com and drcarly.com. I strongly suggest you print out those diagrams and listen to the YouTube videos posted after them, where I explained these diagrams at a conference I gave in Chicago, which are based on pure common sense and have never been refuted. Despite a $10,000 reward I posted on drcarly.com in 2006 for any white coat to refute them on the air. To this day, I have received no takers to this challenge. Thanks to the persecution I encountered due to my work, including the abduction and ongoing state-sanctioned torture of my only son, I was forced to face the truth that all the problems we face are being caused intentionally, and the solutions that have been developed by people of conscience who step out of the boxes created when one becomes a licensed professional in any field are being suppressed. Facing the reality that the psychopaths which control our world have created a hell on earth intentionally is a critical step in bringing forth an anti-hell. Overstanding the simplicity of the master template of how this hell has been created makes the antidote equally simple. We don't need all the details. All that is necessary is for people of conscience to say no to their predators, to stop loving them, forgiving them, making excuses for them, and to stop funding our own destruction. It is my intention to give you the truth of what I and my guests have learned, to arm you with the confidence to ask the hard questions, which will not only cause the predators to run away, but will also cause you to face the monsters destroying your own lives. There is an army of people of conscience standing up. And, of course, you don't hear about them on the mainstream media. Our very survival is being threatened. It is time to stand up, speak up, and, when necessary, shout. Silence is consent, and if you do not stand up and speak out, you are aiding and abetting your own destruction, thus acting as an accomplice to those murdering you and those you love. Speaking the truth and asking hard questions in great numbers is the road to anti-hell. Bypassing religious beliefs that only some man in the sky can save us is very important, as religion prevents logic, reasoning, formation of a plan to save ourselves, and then taking action. For only acting on the truth will set you free. Believing the lies or doing nothing will enslave you. Confronting evil with documented truth is all we need to do. Compromise with evil is impossible. And when evil is on the run, that's when we press harder. Whatever false beliefs you have about any subject, that is what is being used to control you. Overstanding the puppet masters allows us to see the master template of the predators' crimes against humanity, as well as how they use PSYOPs operatives to divide and distract people of conscience. We can then cease being prey and destroy the predator bloodline psychopaths that have created this hell on earth. If you think my work is important, please tell others about the show. You can support my work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. If you can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them from me. To learn how I do consults, click on the Services tab on my ReversingVaccineInducedDiseases.com site. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. I also have a toll-free number, which works for the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean, 888-321-6751. If you get a strange message that the number's been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you, because strange things happen on a regular basis. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for my international clients and radio shows, so it's better to call me or email me if you're in the areas that I described. I do not practice medicine nor give medical advice. Rather, I teach you what I would do if I were you to reverse diseases with natural therapies in people and in pets. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in. The number is 0208-144-3781. That's a new number, 0208-144-3781. It goes through Skype, so even though it's out of the UK, anybody can use that number. Or you can Skype the producer of the show at TCT, for these changing times, TCT-calls, C-A-L-L-S. Very important, callers need to mute their phones while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever's speaking. Please wait until the second hour to call in so I have an opportunity to introduce the topic of the week. One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone is purchase a silver lungs colloidal silver generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinducediseases.com to learn how to obtain the silver generator I use and recommend, personally using it for myself and all my pets, 3 dogs and 2 cats, who don't get vaccinated and therefore they're the healthiest pets you've ever seen. On today's show, the answer to the question, what's ailing the world, is let's ask Dave McGowan. This amazing researcher who I was introduced to, who is a regular guest on Spingola Speaks on RBN, when I first heard him talking, I was just totally amazed. And there's so many different subjects that we can cover with Dave. But first, I would like you to introduce yourself to the listeners, Dave. I saw the bio that you posted, which is quite hilarious. But if you could kind of just break it down and tell the listeners, how did you become interested in all of these subjects that you cover?
Oh, God, that's a good question. I've always considered myself something of a skeptic. You know, I mean, from my earliest days of my education in high school and college, things just never seemed to add up. You know, things just did not make sense to me in terms of, you know, how I was being taught that the world was supposed to operate. And, so it's, you know, basically, probably like in my late 20s, I just sort of embarked on a mission to try to make sense of the world, really. And my original goal was really pretty much a selfish one, actually, which was just I needed in my own mind to make sense of the world that I lived in, and it wasn't making sense to me. Based on everything that I had been taught, you know, by all the institutions of society, you know, the government and the schools and churches and business and whatnot and the legal community and the medical community. And, I just felt like I was being lied to by basically everyone. And so, I set out on a mission to sort of re-educate myself. And, the internet, you know, the rise of the internet really, really kind of fueled that to a considerable degree. And so for the last like 10, 15 years, it's been a greatly accelerated process. And it's been a really strange journey, I've got to say. And, at times I questioned whether I should have even taken it, you know, the benefit is that the world now makes sense to me. You know, anytime something happens that before would have made no sense, it now kind of makes perfect sense to me. And there's sort of a harmony in the world in my mind. You know, everything happens for a reason. There is a rhyme and a reason to why things happen, but the downside is just the feeling of hopelessness, you know, and just being overwhelmed by just how much is wrong and how much needs to be fixed and how much we continue moving in the wrong direction. And, you know, the question that I ask myself a lot is it better to know and not be able to do anything about it, or is it better to just live like the rest of the world and, you know, live your life with your head in the sand? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Okay, can I comment on that? Because that's very important. And I will give my response. You're talking about the ostrich syndrome, where people bury their heads in the sand believing that their butts won't be, bit off by the predator psychopaths. The bottom line is that everyone is being affected. The list is endless of the answers to what's ailing the world. The genocide, the chemtrails, the poisoning of our food, water, air. I mean, the list is endless. So what I'd like to encourage people to do is, first of all, check things out for yourself. I always tell people, don't believe anything I say. You must do your own research, because we've been lied to about everything. And then you start educating others, because the psychopaths who control the world, there are many more of us than there are of them. I divide the world into two classes, psychopaths and people with a conscience. And the people of conscience, yeah, it's really ugly, it's scary, it's very hard to face what's actually happening. But like you said, Dave, then it all makes sense. And once you realize that all these terrible things are being done but on purpose, it's a matter of getting rid of the psychopaths. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree with you 100% on what you said about not just accepting what you say either. And, I mean, that's been my goal from the beginning. My goal, and a lot of people don't really understand this, but my goal is not to preach to people. I don't like to be preached to by other people with their belief systems, you know. My goal is to provoke and to inspire people to question everything, you know. I don't want you to just assume that I'm telling you the truth any more than, you know. I mean, the mainstream media lies, you know, that's a given. But, you know, I don't believe that people should trust the alternative media, you know, or take it, certainly not at face value. I think everybody needs to do their own, you know, look into things themselves. So that's really, you know, as you said, and I guess that's your goal as well, is to inspire people to reject everything that they're told and to start from scratch and look at things, you know, just look at it yourself and draw your own conclusions. Don't accept anything on the word of authority. That's pretty much my motto.
Right. As a matter of fact, what I have realized from my 15 years of research, you know, into this can of worms, this black hole of deception that's been plaguing humanity for, you know, thousands of years, is that the easiest place to start is if you were taught anything by any of these, you know, places of higher learning or churches or everything, just assume it's a lie, turn it around 180 degrees, and most likely you're going to find the truth, and start your research there. And, of course, one of the big problems we have, Dave, as I know that you know, is that we have been fluoridated, aspartame, vaccine damage, psychiatrically drugged, and all kinds of things. So that's why I always encourage people to learn about natural health solutions so that you can get your brain working. Because if your brain doesn't work, you're not going to even be able to handle the information. But I just want to really encourage people to not get into the hopeless mode. We're already dead. Okay, that's the way I look at it. We're already dead. You know, there's many places, UN Agenda 21, the Georgia Guidestones, they plan on killing off 90% of us, and they're doing a very good job. So if you take that attitude from the beginning, then you can lose your fear and do whatever you're led to do by your conscience to change things. Because if, in fact, we know, well, we don't know all of the psychopaths, many of them at the higher levels kind of hide in plain sight, but certainly we know enough of them that we can start to take action. Now, of course, one of the problems is, where are you going to go? Okay, you can't go to the District of Criminals to lay charges of treason, because they're all criminals as well. And you can't go to courts because they're totally corrupted. So the people are going to have to figure that out for themselves. I like to talk about J.B. Campbell, who has a website, Extremism Online. I think he's got the right idea, but and I'll have him on as a guest on this show soon as well. He's already been on my other show. But the point is that doing nothing is certainly not going to help us. Would you agree with that, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, that's you know, that's we're encouraged to be apathetic. You know, to just not care, you know, and so that's, you know, that's playing right into the program, pretty much, you know.
Right.
So,
as a matter of fact, yeah, let me just say, I just want to say, because this was an amazing experience. I do shows almost every day on other people's networks. And on Thursday night, I did a show on Blog Talk with this woman who exposed CPS abuse, how they're stealing children for no reason and using them for pedophilia and all kinds of things and allowing them to be murdered and stuff. And she's been doing this work for years, and I was on her show Thursday night talking, as I do, about all the ugliness, the big picture, and I was amazed to hear her say that her group was now filing a lawsuit involving some case, I don't even remember the details, and I couldn't believe my ears. I'm like, wait a minute, you know the courts are totally corrupt. Why are you going back into the den of land sharks in order to, quote-unquote, get justice? And she said, well, the time might be right. You know, maybe now things will change. And my answer to that is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Not to mention the fact that when I asked her, she happens to be African-American, and the African-Americans should know by now, you know, they've been undergoing all kinds of experimentation and various nefarious things for generations. Why aren't your group taking action in some other way? And her answer was, well, they've written laws. You know, they're calling Americans terrorists if they do this or do that. So it's just like you said, Dave, they're trying to basically instill in people this fear that if you rise up and take action, then they're going to come after you. Well, they're already coming after you. You're already dead. So I just wanted to mention that because it's really important for people to do something. They have to decide for themselves what to do. But, of course, as you've done, checking into these things and finding out the master template is very important because once you realize they basically have the same master plan. They just tweak it here and there for different purposes. And just explaining that to people helps them see what they need to see.
Yeah, and just, may I just add, by the way, that when you say doing something, doing anything that does not include trudging off to the polls every couple of years to cast your vote for somebody that you think is going to fix things, because
right.
They're not.
Right, right. Well, and the fact that they're actually talking about the Electoral College, you know, it cracks me up. Because basically the way the founding Masons developed the program to lead us down this road in the first place, it doesn't matter what the vote is because the electoral people will make the final decision, not to mention the voting machines that they've developed so that they can put into office whatever puppet they want in office. It's a total joke. And I voted once in my life, but, of course, I don't waste my time anymore on that delusional activity.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people still to this day will tell me, you know, will ask me, you know, how can you complain about this and that, and when you don't even bother to go out and vote, you know? I mean, we're just so conditioned from birth to believe that that's what our duty is, and that's, you know, our involvement in the political system. And as long as we keep doing that faithfully every couple of years, that everything's going to be fine. But it's just not the case, you know. These people are all very carefully vetted. They're very carefully screened, and before anybody has a chance to cast a vote for any of them, you know, they're fully in the pocket of you know, the people at the top of the food chain, and it's not going to work. It's not going to change anything, and, you know, regardless of what your perspective is, whether you consider yourself a Tea Partier or an anarchist or whatever it is, there's nobody that's going to represent you in Washington or in your state capital. It's just not going to happen.
Well,
yeah.
As a matter of fact, the Tea Party is a perfect example of psyops and infiltration. Because when the Tea Party first happened, it was a bunch of people who were disgusted with what's going on, standing up and saying, we're not going to take this anymore. And what happened immediately? It got infiltrated by Sarah Palin and Dick Armey with his Freedom Watch and funded by the Koch brothers who, you know, there's a... on the other side, they have David Soros. So it's all the same crap. It's just a divide and conquer strategy. But once they started the Tea Party and had the Republicrats take it over, you know, I'm just amazed that people can't see that that's going on. But you still have people claiming to be Tea Partyists, and of course, things are getting worse every day.
Same with the Occupy. I mean, it's all but impossible to get a movement going and keep its goals pure because everything is just co-opted and taken over and so quickly and turned into a tool of the government, and while the people in it still think that they're, fighting the good fight, they're actually, just playing their roles. And it's a very tough it's a tough system to beat, because any movement that has the potential to affect significant change is going to be, every effort is going to be made to co-opt it and redirect that movement very quickly. And that's one of the things that people really need to be on the alert for and watch out for and try to deal with, because it's going to happen.
Right. That's why it has to be done on an individual basis. That's why I have never formed any group, because it, just like you said, that's what always happens. And actually, I wasn't going to start with this, but what you just said brings up the topic of Laurel Canyon. Dave has investigated a few things. My two favorite subjects of his are the Global Pedophile Network, which I definitely want to get into, but also the Laurel Canyon situation. And there's so many essays you've written on this. I've read almost all of them. In a nutshell, basically, as it turned out, the whole hippie movement, where they basically got people who were sick of the Vietnam War and were starting to get upset with that, let's get them involved in rock and roll and peace and love and start taking acid and distract them from that. And it was truly amazing the research that you've done in regards to so many bands back at that time, how the children of CIA minions were involved in many cases in becoming rock and roll stars. So if you could kind of give the big picture of that and let the listeners know where they can access those articles. I know it's in a few places, but where would you suggest?
Oh, God, where do I start? I mean, I think it runs, it's like a book-length series at this point. It started off much less ambitious than that, but it's just grown and grown and grown. But it's on my website and cross-posted by various other people. You can probably run a Google search and find it pretty easily. The series is called Inside the LC. I don't even remember the full title of it. But anyway, that is, there's a lot of thought on the 60s and the hippie movement and the Flower Children and the Weather Underground and all of that was going on and a lot of people feel that it was very much a legitimate movement. Other people feel that it started out as a legitimate movement and was quickly co-opted. But from my research, I have definitely drawn the conclusion that it was never really a organic grassroots movement right from the start. That the powers that be knew that there was going to be resistance to the planned war in Southeast Asia, that they knew they were going to be turning up the heat on that, and they knew that there was going to be resistance to it, and so they just the whole sort of hippie movement and the music that went along with it and the whole thing, I don't believe was ever organic from the start. It was started from the beginning by the sons and daughters of the military intelligence community, almost exclusively. I mean, if you look at the background of virtually any one of the big name stars that came out of that scene, and it produced just a an amazing number of bands that came out of this one small little tiny geographic area in the Hollywood Hills. But if you look at them just right down the line, you find that the you know, one after another, you know, whether it's the leader of the Doors, Jim Morrison, who was the son of the Navy Admiral who oversaw the Tonkin Gulf incident, or whether it's Frank Zappa, whose father worked at the Edgewood Arsenal doing, like, biochemical warfare research, or whether it's, you know, I mean, just on and on and on, right down the line. Like virtually every one of these people were sons and daughters of people with high level intelligence connections, and you know that can't really be a coincidence that the movement was not just co-opted but was actually started basically by the intelligence community, and I believe it was quite deliberate, and it was. The goal was to put the most unappealing face possible on the anti-war movement, because the real anti-war movement began on college campuses among college professors and their students who were, you know, respectable, clean-cut, you know, middle America types. And the whole purpose of creating this sort of hippie flower child movement was to put a completely different face on the anti-war movement, and one that would be completely objectionable to most mainstream Americans. You know, the long hair and the free love and the free drugs and the free sex and the, you know, I mean, everything about them. The way they dressed, the way they looked, the way they spoke, the music they listened to, the lifestyle, it was all designed to marginalize the anti-war movement, to put the most unappealing face possible on the anti-war movement that would just turn off the majority of Americans. And, I think it was completely phony from the start. And, it's a very long series, and, you know, you have to read all the way through it to sort of grasp that. But, you know, that's definitely my take, you know, after an extensive amount of research, and, you know, I was already of the opinion that, you know, people like Leary and whatnot were clearly, not what they pretended to be, and that their message was very counterproductive. Because what they were telling people is exactly the opposite of what you're telling people. He was telling people just ignore it, just forget it, turn on, tune in, drop out, indulge in all of, you know, your own personal hedonism and forget about all the stuff the government's doing. Just ignore it, and which is, you know, a recipe for disaster. And but, you know, I did not know until I really dug deeply into this that, you know, even the people that I had once looked upon as sort of the heroes of the 60s, We're not what they pretended to be, and I think the whole thing was completely fabricated. It was just completely scripted and put into effect, and was quite effective, and it really, to this day, has really killed any. You know, I mean, the kind of stuff that's going on now, if it had been in the 60s, holy, I mean, there would be huge marches in Washington. College campuses would just be going crazy, you know. I mean, we got multiple wars going on. We got our civil rights and privacy rights and due process rights being stripped away day by day. You know, I mean, it's just so much going on, and yet, do you see any protests? You know, on college campuses, you see nothing. You know, you see no big march. I mean, all of that died, And I think that was all very deliberate, and it all played out according to the script, pretty much.
Well,
and we're still paying the price for it.
Yes, and see, overstanding this information, and I really have to commend you. Your research is just amazing, what you've been able to turn up on that Laurel Canyon series. But now, of course, with technology and with psychiatric drugs, of course, they brought things to a new level. They've developed frequencies, sound of silence frequencies. People can check this out for themselves. You can read the patents, mind control patents, which they're obviously using in places like colleges and churches and things to keep them being sheep. And, of course, as occurred with me, the reason the medical mafia went after me in New York State, I had never had a single complaint against me by any patient, even when I was a surgeon. So it was a public access TV show that I did, and they determined that I had a delusion of conspiracy, even though I had 10 psychiatrists and psychologists all say I was fine. They just refused to allow that information onto the record. And, of course, the whore for their court, a foreign medical graduate by the name of Zev Labens from France, determined that, yes, in fact, I was delusional about conspiracies and that this delusion was so dangerous I would have to be psychiatrically drugged, electroshocked, or institutionalized, you know, to keep my license. So that's when I told them, you can have your license. I'm a teacher now. But the psychiatrists, of course, are highly involved in this. That's the reason they developed the term conspiracy theory. My answer to that is that I don't deal with theories. I deal with documented facts. I don't talk about anything unless I have researched it myself and I can prove it. And so, you know, these are some of the word games even that are being used against the people. And, of course, the whole fear thing, like that interviewer on Thursday night that basically admitted, well, we've, you know, gone the court route for years. It hasn't worked. But we don't dare do anything else because they've written laws now. You know, you can be defined as a terrorist and all this other crap. And so I think they've kind of changed it over now into a fear thing. They're just putting people into fear and trying to use that to keep them quiet.
Yeah, absolutely. Obama just signed a bill. He signed a couple of bills in the last couple of months. One, which pretty much everyone knows about, I think that... you know, basically gives the government license to assassinate any American citizen as deemed a terrorist. And, but another one, which hasn't gotten as much notice, is the one that he signed that basically makes, a lot, like pretty much any sort of meaningful political protest in this country illegal now. That, once this law goes into effect, it's gonna be illegal to protest or engage in any act of civil disobedience at the White House or at any venue where the president, vice president, or any official under Secret Service protection is at or is likely to be at or something like that. So, like, Republican and Democratic conventions this year are going to be off limits. Any campaign, I mean, anywhere where anyone of any importance is going to be or could be, is going to be illegal. Actually, illegal with the penalty from 1 to 10 years imprisonment or something. I heard, and yet there's no outcry about that. You know, we're supposed to live in the greatest democracy that mankind has ever produced, And the president can, with the stroke of a pen, basically outlaw any kind of meaningful political protest here, and nobody says a word. You know, it's just, stunning.
What's really hilarious to me, and you can see why this puppet, this CIA spook, was chosen to be the president now, one reason being, of course, he happens to have dark skin, even though it came out during the election. He's six cousins with Dick Cheney. But it's amazing how many African Americans will keep on praising this terrorist, no matter what he does, just because he's got dark skin. Not to mention the fact he was allegedly a constitutional professor before he became, a puppet in the Senate and then president. How does a constitutional professor do things like this? I mean, exactly like you said, and nobody's saying anything. I live in North Carolina. I'm about 45 minutes from Charlotte, where the Democratic National Convention is supposed to be in a few months. And they actually had a photograph in the paper, which I only read to see what they're feeding the sheep, of a tank which looked very much like the tank used in Tiananmen Square to roll over that protester, they're going to have tanks here patrolling the streets. So I didn't know about that law you just mentioned, but now I know why they're getting their tanks ready, because I think we're going to be having a Tiananmen Square thing happening here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, it's going to get bad. It's definitely going to get, there's a lot of red flags out there right now that, some bad things are coming this year. Exactly what they're going to be is difficult to say, but, I got a very, very bad feeling that there's some bad stuff coming down the pipeline, and a lot of preparations are being made for that. If and when another major terrorist attack is staged on these shores, I mean, it's pretty much going to be the end of the game. You know, we're pretty much going to be under martial law, you know, within no time. And, you know, all the apparatus is in place, and, you know, all they need is, you know, the next pretext that comes down the pike is the response to it is not going to be good. And, I don't know. I have a very bad feeling about this year, and not just because the Mayans say that this is the year that the world ends, but, there's definitely, I don't know. This seems to be a lot of red flags and a lot of preparation being made for something big. You know,
right.
It's the feeling that I get.
Well, I totally agree, and I think that's why a lot of this 2012 hype was put out there. Although I try to look at it as a new beginning, because the good news is people are waking up, and the more that they crush us, the more people of conscience are going to stand up. There's no question in my mind about that. But yeah, it's going to get ugly. And I just wanted to also mention that it's very interesting. We now had this recent, about a month ago, a shooting of this Trayvon Martin in Florida by a neighborhood watch person. And the media, I mean, there's one station, this HLN News, it covers it 4 hours a night for a month now. And I think one of the reasons that operation was pulled off is because Neighborhood Watch is a way for the neighborhood to find out what's going on. I mean, you know, yeah, we have gangs, and of course most of them are funded and controlled by the CIA. But, you know, the things that are being done in the neighborhoods, they want to basically now make them, the Neighborhood Watch people, bad guys, and so that people will, you know, not want them to, their communities to have a Neighborhood Watch, because it's much easier for them to pull off whatever their nefarious agenda may be, especially with checkpoints and things of that nature, if people aren't out and about, you know, checking things out.
Yeah, that thing's gotten just an enormous amount of attention, hasn't it? I mean, it happened like, what, a month ago or something, and it's just been constantly in the news ever since. And, I'm not sure what to make of it at this point. You know, like the guy is like the son of a judge. Or something, the magistrate judge or something, the Zimmerman guy.
Uh-huh.
And, his mom was also, works for the court system, so, which is probably one of the main reasons that he hasn't been arrested, but, you know, I just wonder if there's a larger purpose to that whole thing, as you say. I don't know. I mean, to some extent, it almost seems to me like it might be like a sort of a step towards, like legitimizing sort of to not like doing away with Neighborhood Watch, but sort of, like legitimizing, sort of like private militias or private armies, giving like private militias sort of a license to kill, you know, and, you know, I don't know where we're headed, really, but there could be some very, very significant factors at play in the whole thing, and I'm not sure where it's going, actually.
Well, usually they have many layers to things that they do, and of course, this has also caused a racial divide. You know, as soon as you see Al Sharpton on the scene and Jesse Jackson, you know, they're going to milk this for all it's worth. So there's many layers to it, as always there is. But I just want to change the topic a little bit now, especially as we were saying before the show, it's really funny how today's April Fool's Day and also the beginning of Holy Week. And I read the article you have on Dave's Web, D-A-V-E-S Web, .cnchost.com, entitled Random Thoughts at the Dawn of the Year 2012. February 13th, 2012. And I just want to read some of the things you wrote in here, which I just thought was hilarious and extremely on point. And you're talking about, Jesus of Nazareth. And one of the things you say in here is, given that the primary building materials in the land of his birth were sand and rock, it's far more likely that Joseph and his sons were stonemasons, just saying. And then, I love this one, observation number 5, Jesus was very likely a controlled Roman asset, just as nearly 2,000 years later, the obviously controlled asset known as Jesse Jackson replaced the slain Martin Luther King, and the equally controlled asset known as Louis Farrakhan replaced the eliminated Malcolm X. So it was that Jesus was maneuvered into position to replace the executed John the Baptist, who had, I'm guessing, become a bit of a problem for the Roman overseers. The message that the emergent Messiah delivered to those living under the brutal hand of those Roman occupiers was, by any rational analysis, exactly the wrong one. It was a message brimming with advice about loving neighbors and turning cheeks. A message that constantly reinforced the notion that it was better to be poor and oppressed than wealthy and powerful. For the poor, you see, were going to spend all eternity in the glorious kingdom of heaven, while the rich were going to burn in the fires of hell unless they were somehow able to steer their camels through that eye of the needle. It was, in other words, a belief system seemingly designed specifically to suppress any thoughts of rebellion amongst the unwashed masses. And the beauty of it was that no one could find out if the fabled kingdom of heaven actually existed until it was too late for them to get a refund. And then say, I know what you're thinking here, but they, the Romans, execute Jesus and do so in a horrifically brutal and sadistic manner, you know, like in that Mel Gibson torture porn flick. And then you go on, but you also state, the most likely scenario is that he was replaced with a lookalike at the private palace of Pontius Pilate, where he was taken to supposedly be tried and convicted. And you mentioned in here how, you know, being whipped and having that sort of crowns and all that kind of stuff, I mean, how could you even recognize him anyways? And that's just such a perfect, way to look at things, in my opinion. I mean, this whole religion thing, to me, is such a scam to begin with, and that's why I always say in my intro, you know, it's time to stop loving your predators and forgiving your predators. Your predators are predators. They're killing you. They're raping your children.
Yeah.
They're destroying our earth. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I said before, I do like to provoke, and you know, that article is obviously deliberately provocative and designed to get people to think and to question. And you know, the reality is that none of us can ever really know what actually happened 2,000 years ago. You know, I mean, we can't even trust our information sources to tell us the truth about what happened yesterday or what's happening right now, you know, let alone 2,000 years ago. So, you know, I mean, that article is by necessity speculative, you know, and it's my interpretation of what are said to be the known facts. And, you know, I've heard from a lot of different people that I spoke to before I wrote that and that have emailed me since, and there's a wide variety of opinion on exactly who Jesus was or if he even existed at all. You know, one school of thought holds that he didn't actually exist at all, that he was completely mythical and composed of elements of gods that came before him. And, you know, another school of thought, obviously the Christian school of thought, is that he was the Messiah, the Son of God, he was immaculately conceived and, you know, rose from the dead and all of that good stuff. And, you know, another school of thought, which is mine, is that he was a real historical figure, but he was just a mere mortal man, and that all of the mythical elements were just sort of added to the story. And there's actually a fourth view that I've heard from a number of people, actually, who seem to believe that Jesus was an extraterrestrial, you know, an ET, and that he was the one that started the alien-human hybrid line or something that exists to this day, which is a fourth school of thought. And, you know, I don't tend to believe that, nor do I tend to believe that he was the Messiah. It's quite possible that he was completely mythical, but I tend to believe that he probably was a real historical figure, and that he was most likely a controlled asset, very much like what we see today, and that he was serving his masters and quite well. And I think his death may very well have been faked, and nobody would know. And you know, as I noted, he would have been all but unrecognizable by the time they put him on the cross, and no sooner was he dead than he, you know, disappeared because he's been, you know, resurrected from the dead, or as I tend to believe, because they needed to get rid of the body before any family members showed up in town that would have known that he wasn't who he was supposed to be. So, you know, it's speculative and it's my opinion, but to me it fits, you know, the facts of the case as I know them to be. But, you know, then again, I haven't devoted my life to being a religious scholar, so I don't know all the intricacies of, you know, of it, but to me it's a scenario that makes sense. Like I say, my goal is to make sense of the world to me so that it makes sense in my mind. Now you might put the same pieces together a different way so that they make sense for you, you know, and that's fine. I have no problem with that, you know. My only thing is just look at the, just strip away all the spin, strip away all of the, you know, all of the extra elements, and just look at the basic facts of the case and just how do they make sense to you. And, you know, that's my goal. That's what I want people to, that's what I try to inspire people to do.
Yes. Well, let me just say, there is a religious scholar by the name of Charles Giuliani. He's on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. I've had him on my show a couple of times. And he actually studied to be a theologian, I think it was for 13 years, and ended up realizing that the entire Bible was a fraud, and, you know, started asking hard questions of his teachers, and they actually ended up threatening the life of his children. So needless to say, he got out of that. But I just want to bring up a couple of obvious situations, as far as I'm concerned, with this whole religion thing. First of all, isn't it interesting that our loving God, who makes the rules, supposedly, would decide that his only son would have to be nailed to a cross and die a horrible death to save all of us for our sins, when he created evil, according to Isaiah 45, 5 through 7 in the first place, but yet Satan, the demon, whatever you want to call the dark force, continues to control the world. So that's number one. Second of all, our reward is going to heaven. So basically, that means your reward is death. And just like you state, who can prove that heaven exists in the first place? That's why I talk about creating an anti-hell. And the Catholics especially, I've had so many Catholics tell me, yes, they're suffering, but they're offering their suffering up to God. Who is this monster that wants to watch suffering and enjoys it and looks upon it as a, you know, a desired sacrifice? And then the last thing I'll mention because I want to get into this pedophilia thing as well, is, of course, you know, Jesus allegedly died for our sins. So what I've oftentimes said, and I'm, you know, a lot of the religious people don't like what I say. If they don't like what I say, keep on doing what you're doing, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and getting, you know, no different results, is that if Jesus died for our sins, who's in heaven? I can picture John Wayne Gacy, Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, all of these mass murderers and psychopaths who found Jesus, you know, right before they, you know, stuck the needle in their arm or turned on the electrocution in the chair. That's who you're going to be hanging out with, in my opinion.
Well, you know, one thing that's never really made sense to me is the whole concept of hell. You know, that if you live a life of sin, that you know, you're gonna be sent to hell and suffer for the rest of your life, you know, under Satan's tutelage or whatever. And the whole concept doesn't make any sense to me, because doesn't Satan supposedly want evil to prevail in the world? And so, you know, if you spend your whole life doing the devil's work, then wouldn't you be rewarded in the afterlife? I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, the worst people should have, the best rooms down there, you know. Adolf Hitler should be staying in, like, the presidential suite when you get down there, right? Because, you know, why would you be punished? Why, you know, you're in Satan's lair and you spent your whole life, doing his bidding. Why wouldn't you be rewarded by him in the afterlife, you know? So the whole concept of heaven and hell, for a lot of reasons, is just really, to me, just kind of ridiculous. But it's been a very effective tool for keeping people in line for 2,000 years now. So,
right. Yeah.
You know, can't argue with success, I guess.
Especially, turn the other cheek, you know, that's my favorite. Yes, you know, smack me again. You know, torture me some more. I guess the government especially likes that. And not only that, pay for the weapon used to, you know, smack you on the other side of your cheek. I mean, the whole idea, it goes against survival. If you're going to survive, you have to be protective. And I've also done shows on the whole circumcision thing and how, you know, there's a lot of researchers that have actually realized that this is a way of actually demasculating men and taking away their protective instincts. There's so many layers to what they've done. But I just want to mention one of the things you talked about on the last page of this document, your random thoughts at the dawn of the year 2012, dated February 13th. Because when you were on Deanna's show that I was sent by one of my listeners, somebody had called in and asked you about a link between Rick Santorum and one of the most famous pedophiles now, Jerry Sandusky, and I was amazed to find out that, in fact, you have found that Rick Santorum bestowed a Congressional Medal upon Jerry Sandusky. Now, I wonder, Dave, how come none of his alleged, people that are running against him in the GOP, why haven't any of them mentioned it as we watch these dog and pony show debates? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. And it is. I mean, there's always things like that. You know, if you look through, dig through these guys' histories, you know, there's always big skeletons in the closet that aren't used against them. And It just illustrates how completely phony it is. You know, it seems very real. You know, I mean, these people seem like they really are, you know, giving it everything they have to, you know, defeat their opponents and, you know, build themselves up. But, they routinely withhold the big guns. They routinely withhold the biggest ammunition that could be thrown at these guys. And that's just one more example of that. You know, and of course, I mean, it happened before any of this obviously hit the news, and you know, before anybody supposedly knew what this guy was up to. Although various people at Penn State have known for a long time, obviously, what he was up to. But you know, before the general public knew anything about this guy, and, you know, so I'm sure the media would argue, well, that's, you know, that's irrelevant, you know, he had no way of knowing, blah, 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 but, I mean, the fact of the matter is that if he was publicly linked to Sandusky, it would completely destroy any chance, well, I mean, he has no chance now of clinching the nomination, but, I mean, there's no question that that would be serious damage to his campaign, and not a word of it has been spoken by any of his opponents, by any of the debate monitors, by any of the media, by anyone. You know, and that's not unusual. You know, that's typical. You know, I mean, I wrote years ago about some issues. You know, when George W. Bush was running for president, some things that could have been thrown at him that never were. And, you know, it's a pattern that's repeated every election cycle. And, you know, all of these people have very dark skeletons in their closet, but we're not going to hear about it. And, it just illustrates how despite what appearances seem to indicate, it's all phony. It's all smoke and mirrors. It doesn't mean a thing. This whole drawn-out primary campaign that's gone on forever, seemingly with two dozen debates and a half a dozen front-runners and, you know, on and on and on, does not mean a thing. And I firmly believe that none of these people are going to get the nomination. I would actually put money on it at this point that's the goal, is to not have any of the people who've been in the race from the beginning win the nomination. I believe whatever their goal is to have a deadlock convention, and that they're going to toss them all out and they're going to bring in Jeb Bush.
And Sarah Palin.
And Sarah Palin.
You wrote this in the same article, and actually I was amazed to see that, because I figured this out for myself long ago, that, as you said, that would be the dream ticket, and of course, that would explain why Palin has, you know, stayed in the background to some degree, because...
They've both been sitting back, staying out of line of fire, keeping a very low profile, even though everybody knows that they're the strongest, you know. It's like the party's deliberately been withholding its strongest contenders from the beginning, and it's all scripted. The goal is to overexpose these guys, to arrive at the convention with, first of all, with none of them having a lock on the nomination, and second, with the quote-unquote Republican Party base being completely disillusioned and completely disgusted with all of them, at which point they're going to toss him out, they're going to bring in Jeb, he's going to get a huge bounce coming out of the convention, the base is going to be re-energized to an extreme degree, and while turnout has been very low in the primaries due to, you know, the fact that the voters are very demoralized, I think the party is going to just be hugely re-energized. They're only going to have 2 months, a very short general election campaign, and they're just going to steamroll them right into office.
I totally agree with you, although it was very interesting that Daddy Bush and Barbie Bush actually basically put out their, you know, recommendation on Mitt Romney.
Yeah, I know. I've gotten emails about that. People saying, what say you now? Looks like you were wrong, and I don't buy it. I'm still sticking to my prediction. It couldn't have been a more half-assed endorsement. From what I heard, Jeb's was done by a tweet. He sent it out on Twitter with no public statement, no public appearance, nothing. Just, a two-line tweet. I mean, he couldn't put any less effort into an endorsement than that. And, I'm not buying it. You know, they're starting to say now, well, you know, it looks like Romney's going to get it after all, and blah, 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 blah. But from what I've been reading, the RNC has a completely different delegate count than what the various media outlets do, and they have Romney like 100 delegate votes less than what than what others are saying, and basically everybody's saying that the math is so complicated and convoluted this year with all of the changes that nobody's really going to know the delegate count until they arrive at the convention, at which time the delegate count is whatever the RNC says it is. And, right. And that's just going to be it. And also, something like 20%, something like 1 in 5, of the delegates are actually free delegates who are not bound by any primary or caucus votes. And, really all they gotta do is just put the word out to these people, you know, vote anyone but Romney. We don't care. You know, Gingrich, Santorum, Paul, we don't care. You're Romney. And, you know, just that alone would probably be enough to deny Romney the nomination, regardless of what happens between now and then. So, I think it's all been scripted. I think it's all been by design from the beginning. They're deliberately holding the real candidates out of the line of fire. And, you know, it's going to totally expose what a complete sham our system is, although nobody will even recognize that, because by the time the conventions get here, we will have endured this primary for how long? Like a year and a half? It seems like it's been going on since Obama took office, you know, and through 24 debates and, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars spent, thousands of ads aired, and when it finally comes down to it, to the general election, what we're going to have is 4 people, not one of which got a single vote in any primary or caucus. That's what we're going to have. We're going to have Obama and Biden, who set out the whole process. And if my guess is correct, Bush and Palin, who also set out the whole process. And this whole thing will have just been a completely pointless diversion that went on for like 2 years. And it means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I am firmly convinced that that's going to be what's going to happen come September. So,
well, as you wrote in your document, what we have here is definitely cleverly crafted theater. And, of course, we know that all of the participants in this Dog and Pony Show, they all know what's going to happen. And basically, just as you wrote, you know, what a great way for none of any kind of dirt to really come out against these people. It always cracks me up that people are, you know, talking about, well, is Obama really a citizen and all this crap? When are they going to figure that out? By the time his presidential term ends? And who cares anyways? Look, like you said, at what he's doing. He's saying that the military can kill American citizens. And that you can't protest and all these kinds of things. We have so many diversions that are basically keeping people away from the really important facts.
Oh, I know. People have been chasing that birth certificate thing for 3.5-4 years now. And it's like, who, you know, why do I care where the guy's born at? I really don't. I mean, let's look at what he's doing to the damn country, you know. Let's just keep the focus on where, you know. That's just a total diversion, and, you know, whether there's any legitimacy to it or not, I have no idea, and I don't even care, you know. I mean, I don't care if the guy was born on Mars, if he were actually doing something good for the country, you know, but he's not. So, it's a crazy world out there, it really is, people get sucked into these pointless little rabbit holes, you know, that just go on and on and on. And, I don't know. What, by the way, this is completely off topic. What do you make of the whole Jason Russell thing down in, did you follow that a few weeks ago when, the guy who was sort of the point man on this Coney 2012 PSYOP, his programming kind of went ran amok, and he did a little performance art piece down in San Diego. Did you follow that at all?
Yeah, well, I basically... basically, I liken that to the stewardess that snapped on an airplane, and now just recently we had a pilot snap as well. I'm convinced these are like experiments they're doing to see, to use their energy weapons, their silent sound frequencies, voice to skull, different things that they can do to create another diversion. You know, it's another diversion is what it is. And I think that that's what we're witnessing is basically military intelligence experiments that they're going to be using on lots of people.
Yeah, well, this good guy.
I just want to also finish and say, because it's the whole problem reaction solution thing. What are the possible ramifications of a stewardess and a pilot snapping like that? Well, people are going to be scared to fly, and who knows what kind of testing and other things they'll have an excuse to use now on the staff that fly the plane and the stewardesses as well. As far as this whole Coney thing, to me, that was a joke to begin with. And you had all the Hollywood stars, Justin Bieber, and a whole bunch of people, you know, tweeting for people to watch that Coney 2012 thing. Yeah, let's have a diversion. Let's see the horrors that are going on in the country that man runs. Don't look over here. Don't look at the fact that Obama just passed the laws you mentioned, and we have so many people being murdered in this country for speaking the truth. And just like you said in your piece, it was also very suspicious about how fast what's his name, the coach from Penn State, the guy that died so fast of cancer. I'm just blanking out on his name.
Yeah, that was Paterno. Yeah, I mean, yeah. The guy, you know, he seemed indestructible. He's, you know, been this sort of the been there for forever, and it didn't seem like he was ever going anywhere or ever going to die, and then the scandal hits, and he is forced to retire, and then, like, literally weeks later, the guy just drops dead.
Right.
It's highly suspicious, especially, and then added to that the fact that his death was actually reported before it actually happened.
Yeah.
That makes it, that definitely, the timing and the reporting on it, very extremely suspicious, and the fact that he had very, very high level connections, you know, he was, by his own account, he was, very good friends with both Gerald Ford and, ex-president Gerald Ford and ex-president, George H.W. Bush. You know, who have both been named in other, pedophile and mind control type, operations, going back many, many, many years. And, so it's very curious that this guy who was, you know, directly connected to Sandusky also happened to be, have their other, very high level friends who have been, certainly accused of being involved in such activities. So Paterno could potentially have been a link that could have led to places where people in high places do not want this investigation to go. So it was certainly very convenient that he dropped dead when he did, and also that Louis Free of all people was assigned to oversee the investigation of the case, you know, after which we've hardly heard a word about it. It's pretty much dropped off the media radar screen, which tells me that Free's doing his job, because that's what he was brought in for, damage control. He wasn't brought in to bring out the truth, obviously. He was brought in to make sure that it didn't spread any further, and he seems to be doing a very fine job of that, so... Yeah, there are definite indications that the Penn State case runs a lot deeper than Sandusky, but that's all being very carefully buried as we speak.
Well, I just want to say, for one thing, and I think that you uncovered this as well, I have so many of your documents in front of me, but that Paterno had actually been a speaker at one of the Republican conventions, so that's kind of obvious. But to me, this whole Penn State thing, it's basically modeled after the Franklin cover-up, It's the same kind of thing. Make some kind of a nonprofit organization. In the Franklin cover-up, it was Boys Town. In this cover-up, it was this a Second Mile Foundation. Bring in children that you know are traumatized or from poor families or whatever the case may be, and then you basically supply those children to high-level pedophiles in the organization for their own uses. It looks like the exact same thing.
Yeah, it very definitely does. Yeah, it looks like another, Larry King, Craig Spence type thing, which appeared to have been going on for a very long time, unfortunately, and being very successfully covered up for a very long time.
Yeah, I want to bring up my favorite document of yours, entitled The Pedophocracy, PEDOPHOCRACY, which is outstanding. It's 52 pages, and you talk about various pedophile rings on the global level. Of course, the one in Brussels that led to the White March, which is something, you know, we need to have done here. You just picture the people in the world realizing that all the governments are being controlled by high-level pedophiles. If that doesn't wake them up, I don't know what will. But you talk about the Franklin cover-up. You talk part three, Uncle Sam Wants Your Children, talking about abuse in military facilities, the McMartin case, which you talk about, McMolestation, and how that was covered up. And then the last part is Finders Keepers that talks about the CIA involvement. And, in fact, it's self-evident that the CIA, the FBI, these organizations are actually covering up for the pedophiles. As a matter of fact, I was amazed this minion, Nancy Grace, which is on the HLN network, she mentioned a few times, and I tape-recorded it, played it on my show. I haven't heard her say it in a few months. But she actually mentioned that 800,000 children go missing in this country every year. Well, what's happening to them? Obviously, they're being used for rituals and who knows what kind of absolute darkness that they're having done to them. But, of course, what does that network do? They'll focus on one case. And when they focus on a case, you know that that person isn't a Mason. You know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of dark people out there. Many of them have been abused themselves. But they never talk about the big picture, the fact that this is going on all over the world and it's such gigantic numbers here in this country. And nothing is being done.
Yeah, it's amazing. And one thing that really surprised me in researching and writing the articles was just how much information, how much evidence is actually available. And, I put those together. My goal specifically was to draw only on, quote-unquote respectable media sources from mainstream media and from government files and from court records. And, you know, there's no... there's nothing sourced to, like, Conspiracies Are Us or, you know. My goal was to try to see if using just sources that most people, non-conspiracy-minded people, would consider respectable, credible sources, if a case could be built. And surprisingly, it can be. It takes a little work, but, the evidence is out there, it would be very difficult to do now. Actually, when I did it, the internet was a much more free place than it is now, and I was able to go on to all of these, mainstream newspapers' websites from across the English-speaking world in the UK, the Guardian, the Independent, and the Scotsman, and Australia, various the Sydney Morning Herald, I think, and the Age, and just all over Canadian press, and even the U.S. press, and And I was able to go through and search their archives and pull up all of these articles that have been written over the years documenting this stuff, and which would be much more difficult to do nowadays. You can still do it, but it would cost you a fortune because all of these media outlets now have their archived material in paid archives where you have to pay like as much for a single article as you do for like a whole month of home delivery of the paper. So they make it deliberately much harder to get that information than it was when I was doing the research, but it is out there, and if you're willing to put in the time and the effort, you can find sources that will document. As hard as these stories are to believe, there is evidence out there documenting them, and I did the best I could to scrape all that up and put it together with the goal of convincing, of not preaching to the choir, of not just putting out another series of articles, on this stuff that would, play to the people who are already inclined to believe it, but to try to convince the skeptics that this stuff really does go on, and that it can be documented through credible mainstream sources if you put in the effort. So that was sort of the background of those.
I was forced to not believe this, but know it when my only child was violently attacked when he was 3 years old on Father's Day. This is a big Masonic hint there. And, of course, he's had no contact with me for 10 years and is in the custody of the man who violated him. And going through that whole process and realizing the layers of cover-up and corruption, fraud that are involved. As a matter of fact, I brought back the days when I thought I could get justice in the courts. I was involved in 7 courts during 7 years trying to save my son. And I sued the judge in federal court, Richard Lawrence, who made this decision. And Attorney General Spitzer, Client 9, was Attorney General of New York State at the time. And, of course, he got the case dismissed, saying that the judge was immune even if corrupt, malicious, or incompetent. But that's when I first started researching all this. I found out about the Franklin cover-up. And one of the most interesting comments you make in this amazing article, which I encourage everyone to read and pass to others, because like I said, I'm convinced that this is the thing that's going to wake people up. If they don't care about their own children being raped and murdered by the high-level government officials and all these agencies covering it up, then what is there to care about? I mean, of course, your health is important as well. But you mentioned on page 3 of the document that in regards to this Mark Dutroux case in Belgium, and how nothing was happening to this man who obviously was procuring children for high-level officials, and that's why they didn't want to go after him. But a Belgian senator actually noted that such sex parties that are being held are part of a system which operates to this day and is used to blackmail the highly placed people who take part. So it's so obvious that this is how they control these treasonous people in the District of Criminals and elsewhere. They get them involved in these things. As a matter of fact, I think it's probably a test. They want to make sure you don't have a conscience in order to control you. And then once they have the goods on you, because they, of course, take all these things, et cetera, then they use that against you if you ever decide to, turn to the good side.
Yeah, absolutely. It is absolutely used for control, and it has been for a very long time. And funnily enough, crimes against children are used by the very people who commit those crimes against children. The crimes against children are used as a way to bring the American people, and have been for a long time, is a way to bring the American people into line around Washington's aims. That whole Comey 2012 campaign, that was its selling point, was, it was an emotional appeal about crimes being committed allegedly against children in Africa. you know, and as a means to rally the American people to support yet another war, this one in Uganda. Apparently they want to open up another war front in Africa, so they're trying to create, basically what they're trying to do is create a new Osama bin Laden for Africa named Joseph Kony. And, you know, the specific goal of the campaign is to make him a household name, make him famous, make him, you know, as much of a household name as Osama bin Laden. He you know, and the whole selling point is that he's allegedly committing these horrific crimes against children, and so we need to go in there and, you know, mount a quote-unquote humanitarian intervention, you know, as if our special forces are ever employed for humanitarian purposes. But, you know, they've done that for a long time, you know. One of the ways that we were led into the first Iraq war was that we were told that the Iraqi soldiers were going into Kuwaiti hospitals and pulling babies out of incubators and tossing them aside, you know, so that they could steal the incubators. Which later turned out to be completely fabricated by the, you know, the Kuwaiti ambassador's daughter. But that's been a time-honored way of bringing the American people into compliance with appeals, you know, about crimes committed against children, because people will react. People will react very strongly to crimes committed against children. So it's quite ironic, really, that the very people that are the greatest victimizers of the kids and that should be exposed are the ones that are forever selling the American people on their own agenda by you know, utilizing crimes against children. So it's a very sick system that we live in. It really is.
Right, but like I said, once you see the master template and how they work these things, it makes it so obvious to anybody who takes the time to do the research. And, of course, you've done the research, which everyone should be so grateful to you for doing. And all they have to do is verify a couple of these things to realize to the degree that you have your facts correct. And, of course, you're not the only one. I've also had Nick Bryant on my show, who wrote the book The Franklin Scandal. And he's actually obtained access to some of the grand jury testimony in that case. And it's just mind-boggling when you realize the extent to which the agencies that we pay our taxes for to supposedly protect us are protecting the perpetrators of these crimes. That's a very hard thing for people to wrap their head around.
Yeah, it's very hard. And they're also protected by the fact that it's so hard for people to wrap their head around. You know, and they rely on that. And, you know, to the extent that even when there is a little bit of exposure here and there and something starts to break through, it's just so far removed from reality for people, you know, so far removed from their perception of how the world works that, it's just almost impossible for them to wrap their head around it and believe it. No, regardless of how much evidence you can bring to the table, you know, so that they're protected by the fact that their actions are so outrageous and so far removed from our ordinary reality that it's just, it is very, very hard for people to believe that these, politicians are star athletes or celebrities or whatever who are, you know, consistently named whenever one of these cases breaks. It's so hard for people to believe that they could be involved in something like that. People that, you know, they welcome into their homes via their television sets every night, you know, it's very hard for people to accept. But, you know, these people are true sociopaths. You know, they are pathological. They're no different than a Ted Bundy. And, you know, which is, you know, the, sort of the whole, one of the main themes of one of my books, Program to Kill, which is, looks at the whole serial killer phenomenon. And, you know, the first thing you hear when one of these people eventually gets arrested is, you know, all the neighbors and friends come out and express just complete disbelief that they could possibly be involved in something like that, because the person that they knew was, you know, just way removed from that. But, you know, these people, they are not what they appear to be, you know. people, that's one of the big stumbling blocks for people to get over, is to accept that the public face that these people present is not necessarily who they really are. And, that's a very, very difficult thing for people to wrap their heads around. It really is.
Well, I've said for years that that's one of our main problems, is that people of conscience cannot even conceive of the level of evil that we have found in our research. They don't want to know it. You know, it's just too ugly. Who wants to believe these things? And that's why so many of the dastardly things that are being done to us by the terrorists in our own government, especially in the biological warfare front and things of that nature, they make movies out of it. And I call this Notice of Grace. They're basically telling us what they're doing, only they use the movies to do it instead of talking about it on the news.
Yeah, I actually knew a guy. I had a friend that I'd known for a few years who I believe was whacked last year back in August because of work that he was doing that was some kind of biopharmaceutical research that he was doing. He was working for some company. He was a biochemical engineer or something. Not exactly sure the precise nature of his work. I actually knew his wife, I went to school with years ago, way back when, and I had not seen her for like 30 years. And we reunited at a high school reunion, 30-year high school reunion back about 4 years ago, and started hanging out with her again, and met her husband through her, and got to know him fairly well, but, you know, not super well. And anyway, he, unbeknownst to me, he worked as some kind of biopharmaceutical research, and he had just gotten a promotion and a raise, and in conjunction with that, he was flown over to Europe for 2 weeks of training and seminars and whatnot to the company headquarters. And anyway, this was in August of last year. And he returned home from that trip, and literally like 12 hours after setting foot back on U.S. soil, he was found behind an abandoned building down in Long Beach with a bullet in his head, and various other unexplained injuries, and a load of crap in his pants, and various other things. He had, like I say, he had just flown home. He had spoken to no one. After landing, he went missing. So got home on like a Sunday night, went missing for the entire night, and turned up dead the next morning. And the Long Beach police have written it off as a suicide. Closed the case as a suicide. No autopsy, because, you know, when a body turns up behind an abandoned building in Long Beach with no reasonable explanation, you know, there's no need to conduct an autopsy, of course. And so that's something that I've been, that really threw me for a loop and actually just scared the hell out of me. Because, I mean, I've been looking into this stuff for years and years and years, and have looked into a lot of suspicious deaths from afar, but when it happens to someone that you actually know, it's a very weird, very unsettling experience, and just had a very hard time with it for a while. Actually, didn't do any radio interviews for several months after that. Didn't post anything on my website. I was just completely freaked out. And so yeah, it's a very dangerous world that we live in. It really is. And you say the wrong thing, you do the wrong thing, and you learn something that you're not supposed to know, or look under the wrong rock, and bad things can happen. You know, and I don't know exactly what the story was, but it's very hard for me not to conclude that this guy got whacked. You know, the timing, and the guy was not known to be suicidal at all. He was actually just, everything was going really well in his life. His, you know, family was doing financially, he was doing well at work. I mean, he had no known reason to kill himself, and especially 12 hours after returning from his first ever trip abroad. And I saw him right before he left, and the guy couldn't have been in a better mood, couldn't have been happier. He was very excited. He'd just gotten a raise, just gotten a promotion. He was getting an all-expense-paid trip to Europe, you know, first time traveling abroad. And, I mean, he couldn't have been happier. And 2 weeks later, he's dead. And to this day, it's listed as a suicide. And but I don't believe it for a second that he killed himself. And, you know, I think something happened over in Europe, and I don't know what it was. Maybe they entrusted him with some information and then realized they shouldn't have. Maybe he talked to somebody he shouldn't have. He saw something or heard something he shouldn't have. I don't really know, but something happened, and you know, he paid the price for it, and his family paid the price for it.
Well, I just want to say, you see, evil is evil even to its own, and that's why people have to realize that when you start working for various companies or agencies that are committing pure evil, and obviously all the biotech companies are involved with extremely heinous things, then yes, just like you said, if you find out something you're not supposed to know or say the wrong thing, well, then they're going to take care of the problem. But I also want to say that I think the best protection any of us have who are doing research and trying to wake up, you know, the population at large as to what's really going on is to be on the air and to be out there. And because that way, like I said, we're all dead anyways. If nothing changes, I mean, you know, my attitude is if they kill me, I go on vacation. I'm not interested in living in the world they're creating anyways. And I've had 3 attempts on my life, but so far it didn't work. But basically, if something happens to me, well, then a lot of people are going to wonder what happened to me. And, you know, they can make up whatever they want, but it's going to look a little fishy. And that's what's going to take, I think, for a lot of people to face the fact that they're paying for their own destruction. I mean, it's self-evident at this point.
I've looked up the website and whatnot of this company that he worked for, and, you know, everything seems very family friendly and on the up and up, but if you look at the details of the kind of work they're doing, it had very, very clear parallels to, you know, I mean, all pharmaceutical and biochemical research has close parallels to biowarfare research. You know, you can't study how to stop the spread of disease without knowing how to start the spread of disease. You know, it's pretty much a given. So, you know, any company involved in that work likely has a black budget division. And, you know, I'm assuming that the company that he worked for did. And that he caught wind of some of that, something that he wasn't supposed to know. And I don't think he was a bad guy, you know. I mean, I didn't know him all that well, but he seemed like a really good guy. He seemed, he did not seem like he had, you know, that he was part of the system, so to speak. I mean, it could be mistaken, who knows, you know. Maybe he had personalities that I don't even know about, but he seemed like a good guy, and, you know, so my, My hunch is that he found out things that did not sit well with him about the company, but, you know, I don't really know. You know, didn't know him well enough to know, but
he must have been a good guy, because that's why they whacked him, because he found out something they didn't want him to know, and who knows, maybe he, you know, displayed some level of outrage or something. But yes, in fact, it's obvious. This country has 1,300 biowarfare labs. They send their creation, including their viruses they're making to cause cancer. I have thousands of pages of documents from the Special Virus Cancer Program started back at the time of Nixon. And, in fact, you know, they send these creations around by Federal Express. And, you know, who knows what he learned, but I'm sure he was a good guy, and he found out something they didn't want him to know. In all of these places, everything's basically told on a need-to-know basis, you know. You're not going to tell your slave work unit guys at the lower level what you're really up to, because they wouldn't want you to know what they're doing, because that way you might stop doing it.
Yeah, this guy, from what I heard, he, as soon as he arrived home, he, like, almost immediately got in a fight with his wife and stormed out of the house and was never heard from again until he, you know, showed up dead. And my thought is that he basically hit the ground running. He knew when he returned that he was in trouble, and he was desperately trying to put distance between himself and his family as quickly as he could. He probably started a fight on any pretext that he could think of just to get out of the house and put some distance between them. I believe that he was apprehended soon afterwards and held and questioned extensively, scared to the point where he literally lost control of his bowels, because he knew that his life was on the line. He probably knew that his family's life was potentially on the line, and I think his last hours on Earth were pretty horrific, and he died trying desperately to protect his family. And yeah, it's a very sad story. And yeah, unfortunately, I think it happens all the time. You know, we only hear about the really big names. You know, this guy, nobody's heard of this guy. Nobody other than me, nobody even knows that this even happened. You know. I think it probably happens all over the country all the time. And, you know, it's tragic, but it's, I think it goes on all the time, and we don't hear about most of them, you know, but most of them are just little people like that that get in the way. They, you know, find out something they shouldn't, or they, you know, become a problem, and then their problem is eliminated, and nobody knows, you know. Nobody even knows about it. So, yeah, it's a scary world we live in. It really is. And I was paranoid for quite a while. I was looking over my shoulder constantly and watching my back. So, yeah, you know, it is just a very scary world we live in. But despite that, we must be strong and fight back and stand up. And like you say, if we don't fight back, there's not going to be anything to live for anyway. There really isn't, you know. If we don't fight for our future, we're not going to have a future, and our children certainly are not going to have a future. So
yeah, I can't even imagine the world that the children, you know, being born today are going to live in if nothing's done. It's going to be so horrific. And, of course, they've been promoting big time this new movie called The Hunger Games, which is supposed to be grossing huge amounts at the box office, which apparently is being targeted towards the tweens. And basically, in that movie, you know, everybody's hungry because, of course, they're destroying the environment and with all the GMO food and everything they're doing. I mean, as a matter of fact, there's now food flavorings being made out of aborted fetuses, so we're already going into the Soylent Green situation. But in this movie, the premise is that There's 12 districts, and two children from each of the 12 districts volunteer themselves to fight to the death in a gladiator-type situation. And they must fight until only one child is left. And the fact that they're selling crap like this to teenagers, it's just so sickening to me.
Yeah, you know, when the reality TV first started taking over the airwaves, and Survivor was one of the first. My first thought was, you know, how long is it going to be before these tribal councils decide who gets sacrificed that week? Just getting kicked out of the tribe, you know. And we seem to be moving in that direction, you know. Wouldn't surprise me if that doesn't become the reality of our TV programming one of these days in the very near future, you know.
Exactly.
We certainly seem to be devolving in that direction for sure. But as far as the future for our kids, I mean, there was a time when I first started really getting deeply into this, like 10, 15 years ago, and my kids were very young then. They're mostly adults now. Two of them are adults, and the youngest one only has 1 year of high school left. So fortunately for me, my kids have successfully managed their way through a perilous childhood. But when I first started getting into this, they were all very young, and I mean, there was a time when I could barely even look at them without just breaking down in tears, because I just think to myself, my God, what kind of world are we doing? Well, you know, I brought these kids into the world, and what the hell kind of world am I going to leave behind for them? You know, what kind of world are we building for them? What's the world going to look like in 10, 15 years, you know, when they're adults, let alone in 30, 40 years when they're my age, you know? What kind of a world have I brought them into? And, that really became my main motivating force, and I dedicated my first book to them with the notion that, I mean, it says this book is dedicated to, you know, blah, 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 with the hopes that maybe we can begin to build a better future for them. And that book's now like 12 years old, and unfortunately we haven't really started building that better future for them yet, but I keep hoping that enough people are going to wake up one of these days that we can, because the clock is definitely ticking. And our kids have very limited futures right now, let alone our grandkids, which I don't have yet. But we need to start work fast, and we need to get more people involved, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and it needs to start immediately if we're going to have any hopes for futures for ourselves, let alone for our kids and grandkids.
Right. You've mentioned your books. Can you give us a list of the books you've written?
Well, the first one was Derailing Democracy. That was way back in, it was before September. It was a pre-September 11th book. I think it was published in 99 or maybe 2000, which is now actually out of print. The second one was Understanding the F-Word, which was, I think, published in 2000. Well, it was published right around the time of September 11th, although it was actually written before. So those are both sort of classified as pre-September 11th books. You know, the world has changed so much since then that, things I was writing about then are like barely recognizable now. But anyway, the most recent one, and the one that is the most current, and the one that I put the most work into and that I am proudest of, is Programmed to Kill, which is all about all kinds of dark subjects. It's sort of a look at, alternative look at serial killers, and brings in just a whole lot of elements, you know, organized pedophilia and various occult threads and mind control and, you know, nefarious government operations and all of that kind of stuff. And it's sort of my magnum opus, the last book that I published and the one that, again, the one that I put the most work into and that is most represents my thoughts as of now, where my head's at kind of now. Because, I mean, I'm still learning, you know, day by day and month by month and year by year. You know, there's always going to be more to learn. And, you know, just when you think you have everything figured out, you pick up another little fact and have to sort of reinterpret things, you know. So,
right.
You know, none of us have a lock on the truth, you know, we're trying, but, you know, my thoughts have changed quite a bit from when I published my first book through my, most recent. So, anyway, long story short, the one that I would recommend the most is, the most recent one, Program to Kill.
The book that you mentioned, Understanding the F Word, which F word are you talking about in that book?
Fascism, actually.
Oh, okay.
Sort of play on words. And there's
okay.
also a ton of material on my website. There's the Laurel Canyon series, which is a book, which may actually be coming out as a book, by the way. I'm in the negotiations right now with a publisher in the UK to possibly put that out as a book. And there's also like a book length, almost a book length series on the moon landings and a series on 9-1-1 and then just all kinds of other, my thoughts and, research on all kinds of different topics. So there's plenty of information there. You know, you can start there and if you like what you see, then, you know, you could get one of my books and, I might make a couple of bucks off of it. Not much. There's not a whole lot of money to be made out there, by the way, off of these kind of books. You know, some people assume that people like me are just in it for the money, but if you saw my royalty checks, you would realize how ridiculous that is, because there's really, you know, you write books like this, no one's going to promote them, no one's going to market them, you know, you're pretty much on your own. And, you know, without a big publishing house behind you, you're not going to sell a lot of books. No matter, it doesn't matter how good the book is or how, you know, how highly it's recommended, you're not going to make a living or anywhere close to a living, writing this kind of material. So,
that's self-evident. I mean, obviously the reason that you're doing what you're doing is because you want people to know what you have learned, which is the same reason I do what I do. I make a fraction of what I made as a surgeon, teaching people how to reverse their conditions with natural therapies. But I do it because I went to medical school in the first place because I wanted to help people. Of course, the joke was on me. Little did I realize the actual plan was to create diseases and then give people big pharma drugs that cure nothing but make what matters worse. And I just want to mention a couple of things in the creation of psychopaths. I don't know if you're aware. There was actually a study done at MIT that I have a copy of in front of me. It's called Disruption of the Right Temporal Parietal Junction with Transcranial Magnetic Stimulation Reduces the Role of Beliefs in Moral Judgments. So basically, in this study at MIT, which is obviously CIA, they're using magnetic pulses to actually relieve people of their moral impulses. There's also another very important book, Vaccination, Social Violence, and Criminality, by Harris Coulter, and he talks about how damage to the same area of the brain with vaccines can cause, you know, psychopathic behavior. And he has a very long discussion about Ted Bundy in there. Another thing that I've realized that they're doing now is they're using rabies. Rabies virus is the one virus that actually turns you into a cannibalistic, sadistic psychopath. And they're spraying rabies on nature. calling it a rabies vaccine, Rabirol, but in actuality they're spraying live viruses, which, you know, anybody can pick up. They're putting rabies virus in some foods through genetic modification. And also I'm convinced that one of the reasons we have such psychopathic behavior occurring in the military is because many of them are getting rabies virus in their vaccines, which is such a ridiculous thing. I've said for years, you know, Saddam didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, so why are they giving the soldiers all of these vaccines? And, of course, I realized that the reason is because they're experimental guinea pigs, and this is how they, you know, develop their disgusting techniques to create monsters out of these people. And, of course, another thing I found out recently, that soldier in Afghanistan that murdered 16 people, including 9 children, it actually came out in the mainstream media that he was on a drug for malaria, and I forget the name of the drug at this moment. I have so many papers in front of me. But this drug actually mentions in the physician's desk reference, I think it's Laricam, something like that, that it actually can lead to psychotic behavior. And it was actually, you know, mentioned on mainstream media that he had received this drug before this thing happened. So there's no question that they're developing techniques to create psychopaths, because, of course, that gives them another reason. The people are going to rise up and say, we must do something, you know. We need police on every corner. Of course, these psychopathic military people are coming home and becoming police officers. And I also realized a long time ago that the ones with post-traumatic stress disorder are the ones that have a conscience. And they're having their post-traumatic stress disorder because they know what they did, and they're having a problem with it. The ones who love to kill, they don't have any PTSD.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. I read the other day that that whole Afghan massacre thing has been just wildly misreported, and then that there was actually a whole crew. It was pretty much relatively standard search and destroy mission, the entire crew were, and that this guy's just sort of going down as the sacrificial lamb, but that the numerous villagers have reported that that there were multiple soldiers involved in that, which makes sense. I mean, it doesn't really seem likely that one guy is going to creep around the village and take out 16 people, you know.
Right.
So, you know, it probably is the case that this guy's just sort of a sacrificial lamb, and, you know, that there were likely others involved, and, you know, all of them could have been drugged, you know, quite possible. The entire force over there probably is, you know.
Exactly. Right, I mean, how do you create killers? I mean, that are going to go, I mean, the whole war in itself is a scam. It's been reported. Many soldiers have done YouTube videos about how they're actually protecting the opium in Afghanistan because, of course, Big Pharma needs it. So that's one thing we can all be sure of, is that anything we hear on the mainstream media, you know, there's a twist or a spin or outright deception, because that's just how it works.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think of it way back at the very beginning of the show, just you take whatever the mainstream media says, turn it around 180 degrees, and you'll have something approximating the truth, you know. So, unfortunately, yeah, it's amazing how much we are lied about, and how thoroughly we are lied to, just from birth, really. You know, I've had to completely re-educate myself on virtually everything, you know. So.
Yes, and it's very hard, especially, you know, when you have children. I'm sure that they know of much of your work. And, you know, to not, you know, I love the word depression, you know. Like, yeah, go get a drug and become chemically lobotomized. How can anybody that knows what's going on not feel some aspect of depression, you know? And the only, you know, answer to that is to do something about it, which you are certainly doing. And I just so much appreciate your work, and, you know, I'd like to have you on again at some point. Definitely keep in touch, and let me know what's up, and especially if you publish the other series that you mentioned, because people have to learn about these things. It's hard. You know, just like I always say, when I realized that my profession was actually in the business of creating disease and killing people, that was a dark night of the soul for me. But, you know, ignoring it certainly isn't going to work, and certainly participating in it isn't going to work either. So people with a conscience, they have to decide. Either you're going to do something, whatever you're led to do. Not everybody's going to have the courage to do what we do, but do something, because if you don't, it's only going to get worse. So on that note, I'd just like you to give out your website, Dave, and I can't believe how fast this 2 hours went, but we're pretty much out of time, but give out your website, please.
My website is, it's the Centers for an Informed America, kind of a play on words, the CIA acronym, and the website address is www.davesweb.cncpost.com. It's all lowercase, no punctuation. davesweb.cncost.com. And where are we, by the way, before we saw, where are we broadcasting to? Is this a UK, or is this in the States as well? Or?
Oh, it's everywhere, but the show is out of the UK, but it's everywhere. We have listeners.
Everywhere, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, thanks again, Dave, and like I said, keep in touch.
Will do, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
It is injected in them.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
The needle is effective, and the needle breaks the record when the needle is effective. Prevention of the fever, bringing death to the receiver. There's no effort in believing that the method feeds the fever. See the leader. Diseases are invented in the lab. One believes it. I'm reading recent mentions of the jab. Hinted in a grand scab of corruption and lies and shaping views and news and news rumors to the public. But now the floor has risen on a cause of autism. But this show research and scores of poor system. It's mercury and vaccine. Often there's more given, peace ignored and forbidden. Profit is war driven. A score billion on vaccines alone, and the government don't care. They're always texting the clones, and the CDC is right behind this rolling car. Part and vault from the start, and it's evolving us. A big pharma, big deception, Obama, big karma. Hint of wise roach, planet, and vex to healthcare. All the sort of history of sex and healthcare. You got HIV and dirt fume, it's up in the shop. Something connecting the dots between the money that swaps. Yeah, I think a couple of clocks.
If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
If the doctor says no, he can take it himself. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
If the mama says no, he can take it himself. Just say no.
I don't need your prescription, I ain't got no affliction. Corporate pharmaceutical dealing with politicians. Put them on prescription, that should be our own decision. Whether we were spending on vaccines or health and education. Soon they enlist the general populace. They added to the list, pharmaceutical benefits. Yo, Alexis in line, Glasgow Smith's crime. Help them out and find, killing senior disease. Mac, I've often had a swine. Your population is withholding vaccines. Rather let a product like sensation human beings. Now that they're counting their feelings, so they want to hear us when we're running on the machine. Another flu pill, that ain't no major threat. What about an aging population with no safety net? So we continue to believe everything we read. They're just a hesitation that you see.
Weapons of trial and error, we're smiling in terror at the doctor and nurse. Take a hold of yourself and control of your health and say no.
Why did you go first?
One little word that can say your health.
Just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
Don't decide, let them take it himself.
Say no, no.
Say no to the vaccine. One little word that can say your health.
Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
If Obama says, let them take it himself. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
Don't get any injections. You never know what's in them. They're all poison. And there's no record that they ever prevent anything.
Oh. The vaccine manufacturers need approximately 8 to 9 months to produce the amount of vaccine that's going to be required for immunizing the at-risk populations. And so we have to make our recommendations almost a year in advance.
Yeah, you need to stand up for your rights.
Who it was, I, conspiracies, secret ops and spy stations, and the catchword of the year, depopulation. But humans generally are hard to kill, even with the jar of pills. That's why the politicians get to pass the bills for compulsory Gardasil. From Malta to Dagobel and Fardasil, another bill protects this evil Gardasil. May commerce some liability for illness or death that may occur. Cancer, hidden inside the prick, and immune disorders have to get rid and retired and sick. Research is your friend, knowledge keeping is king. Every vaccine has a poison dollar deep in a thing. There's no master flu, they just after me and you. The last dance of June, now they mask us. C3 stars with a cheap sweet tree, swine flu. A scam too, designed to make a $1 trillion on out-of-date Tamiflu. Manufactured viruses, biological warfare, psychological torture. Shell the jet off the warfare. Our bodies are designed to fight those bugs intruding, but only when our diet is right, so don't shove junk food in.
In 1976, it was thought we were on the brink of another major flu outbreak. Medical science appeared to be prepared. The experts planned to use their best weapon yet, prevention with the flu vaccine. 500 soldiers in Fort Dix, New Jersey, came down with the flu in February of 1976. Private David Lewis died, and it was determined that he had suffered from swine flu. At the time, it was feared that approximately 500 other soldiers on the base were ill with the same strain of influenza, and the alarm was sounded. In March 76, President Gerald Ford announced the biggest immunization program in history.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States.
Ford's intention was to vaccinate every man, woman, and child in the United States. Vaccine was rushed into production and imported in great quantities. The cost was to be about $135 million. And the first batch of vaccine was delivered on November 1st. The first public swine flu clinic opened 3 weeks later. From the beginning, the program was criticized for being hastily implemented and unnecessary. But over 50 million people in North America were inoculated at a cost of $100 million before investigators discovered an apparent increase in a rare paralytic disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome among the recently vaccinated. This and the fact that the epidemic failed to materialize led to a quick end to the vaccination program in December 1976.
Researchers and experts now fear that the failure of the swine flu epidemic to materialize in 76 will have detrimental effects on preparations for future pandemics. Dr. Arthur Silverstein was an advisor to the U.S. Senate Health Committee in 1976 and has written a book about the swine flu scare. Dr. Silverstein, you called your book about the experiences of 76 pure politics, impure science. Why is that the right image for those experiences?
I think it's the right image because whereas one still does, it didn't then and still doesn't know all that much about the science of influenza virus, one knows a fair amount about how politics works in Washington. And politics worked very smoothly, although the science...